Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 29 for June 10th, 2009.
To the Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Juster.
And I'm George Abor.
We are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and the culture surrounding them. And today is going to be an epic podcast. Epic. Only because we found an editorial from Chris Remo talking about the trend towards epic games. Are we over-egging the epic in games? In which he discusses and muses on the trend of
overblown, huge, epic laser guns, alien spaceships,
dinosaurs with laser firing swords.
Nothing wrong with that.
I wish we had a game like that. And that's
Turok.
Well, I guess that's true. Well, touche. We already have one of those. All right, so that is a perfect lead in to the column. Basically, he goes through this list of games that are shooting for over-the-top, mind-blowing action at all times. And the term epic has morphed from something that is a broad scope or a huge overarching narrative or a long story into something that he basically defines as totally rad, which is right. I mean, we even say, oh, that's epic when we think something is cool. He starts off talking about one of his favorite game designers, Jordan Mechner, and he's the guy who made Prince of Persia. And this whole column was basically spurred by the idea that
Gyllenhaal's pecs are just too awesome.
They're just too epic. The new Prince of Persia movie might lose some of the sense of what made The Sands of Time a really fun game to play, meaning that it was reserved in a way that something that a Jerry Bruckheimer-type film wouldn't be.
Right, it was subtle,
it gave the player these extraordinary abilities, but it also made the player think about how to use them, and it didn't make the player godly. It was clearly you were still playing someone that was mortal.
Right.
In many ways.
I mean, you're still hanging on for your life when you're on those edges.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and it's something it's strange because that still lost it when it went to the sequel to Sands of Time, which in and of itself became overly epic, you know, with crazy punk rock music, and it was so bizarre, really dark, really epic, in a way that was completely unnecessary and really lost a lot of the Sands of Time feel. And in fact, one of the reasons I like the newer Prince of Persia, even though it's very different from Sands of Time, is the similarities of, you know, just kind of a normal guy. He may be a douchebag, but he's a normal guy. You know, he's not, you don't get the sense of epicness. You know?
He's not, I mean, he's a good swordsman, but he doesn't have any mystical powers. I mean, the mystical power that appear in the game appears from the other character, from Elika.
Right.
He's not a Kratos type character from God of War. He seems a little bit more mortal.
Right.
So the question that comes up in the column is, are we fated to continually strive towards the epic in video games? Is that just the way things go? Is that because violence and battle is usually the number one way to progress in games? Is this just the logical conclusion of a medium in which destroying things tends to grant victory?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, his other option is it's a power fantasy. And
that could very well be also. So, I mean, what are your favorite epic games, over-the-top, action-packed?
Okay, well, Gears.
Gears of War, yeah.
Which was an epic game.
Literally. Yeah.
It's funny because I don't know if some games count, right? Like, Shadow of the Colossus. Epic bosses.
Yeah.
And epic moments. In my definition of the word epic. But I would not equate that game with something like Gears of War. I don't get that same sense of carnage and consistent, raw, like, big. We need to go big. Chainsaw guns. <Yeah.
laughs> Guns with chainsaws. Chainsaws with guns. Who knows what they are? The problem is that so often scope and violence get conflated. Something that's huge, like a huge world, can be Ico or it can be God of War. And they're both very similar. You're going through these huge castles and you're traversing these vast landscapes. And that makes it kind of seem like the same thing at first. But there's clearly a difference. God of War is one of my favorite game franchises now of all time. Like, one of the main reasons I bought a PS3 is because I wanted to be sure I could play God of War 3.
And that is incredibly epic.
Yeah, it's one of the high watermarks of an intense action game, I would say. But it is a little bit strange, especially reading in the news and seeing the stuff coming out of E3, that it seems like that is the normal mode. Like, that seems to be the ideal situation that a lot of developers are shooting for.
Yeah, and if I wanted to just say Ico is an epic game or Shadow of the Colossus is an epic game because there's these large creatures and large environments, we could still say that's problematic. You know, that
just because it's scale?
Just even by scale. It's not something that we necessarily need to run to constantly, you know? I mean, part of it is that there's just a lot of stories to tell, you know? And I think some of the fear that these games are becoming too epic is this fear that we're starting to tell the exact same stories over and over again.
Yeah. Well, how would we do it differently then? I mean, like, could we make God of War or Gears of War in a way different and still play to the same themes?
Yeah, Demigod of Peace, for example. Could be a slightly less epic version.
But I mean, how would it change the gameplay? I mean, I think something like this has to be over the top.
So that's kind of connects to your violence thing, right? Yeah. It could be something where the natural evolution is to add on more gameplay and add on more things that you can do. And the things that will catch your eye are the things that are more expressive, you know, things.
What do you
mean?
Like,
well, so I'm thinking, you know, way back when, if we're talking about Mario Brothers again, you know, you just squish a Koopa and you're done.
Yeah.
But God of War relishes, and Gears as well, in the kill, in the aesthetic appeal of the kill, in the various ways that you can kill people. You know,
still basically squishing Koopas.
But you're still, I mean, it's essentially the same thing. So this idea that it just progresses the natural way may just be our desire for new mechanics, for new ways to look at the same thing.
Well, not new mechanics.
Not new mechanics,
just,
but
just,
I mean,
greater fidelity. Or more artistic detail.
Well, not just that, but also new mechanics. Like, how can we move from clever ways to into, you know, clever ways to defeat our enemies?
Yeah.
And when we think of when we're trying to think of complex mechanisms by which we defeat our enemies, it may just be easier for us to think of, well, what if I'm riding a dragon? You know, that's one way to kill an enemy. Well, I mean, look at Left 4 Dead, right? Left 4 Dead 1 came out. Some people complained that there wasn't enough weapons. Left 4 Dead 2 comes out, and there's an axe, there's a chainsaw, there's a frying pan.
Yeah.
I mean,
but you're still doing the same thing, though.
You're doing the same thing. And I'm not saying that that is necessarily a bad way to go, because it is paying homage to, you know, some older zombie flicks.
Yeah.
But I still get the sense that we are trying to satisfy the crowd that wants the game to be more epic.
Yeah.
To be more awesome, to have more things to do. And it's this more, you know, idea, right?
It just seems like it's a little bit disingenuous then to call it new or innovative when really all you're doing is dressing up an old way of doing things.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, again, like, God of War has unique ways to kill things.
Yeah.
It's still killing, but there's something unique about being able to jump on the back of one of your enemies that I would say is innovative.
Yeah, yeah. How about games that he mentioned, Chris Remo mentioned GTA 4 in the article as a game that is looked to as being a way that gamers can act out just mass carnage in a city. But he was saying that it's also rewarding to just play a regular dude in that city and drive around, obey all the traffic laws, stop at stoplights and pay bridge tolls and just try to blend in. So it just seems like there's not a lot of games that shoot for the epic can also scale down to something that is more mundane.
You mean to do both?
Exactly. I don't think Gears could do both. I mean, there's no sneaking mission in Gears. You know, there's no chess game in Gears.
But maybe that's part of it, though. Maybe it's not really a problem because we do have games like Harvest Moon, you know, that aren't epic unless you think farming vegetables is epic.
Well, I mean,
those turnips. Fat beats and those turnips.
But I mean, I think it shows a certain talent if you're able to make a game that can blow up to a huge scale like that and become action-packed, but then also shrink back down or scale back down to something that seems more realistic. Yeah. You know, that isn't exploding every 2 seconds or something.
I agree. I think RPGs tend to do a pretty good job of this, particularly maybe Japanese RPGs. You know, you've got the grand world, you have some epic battles, but there's also just the general, you know, storyline of a few people interacting with one another.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's also this idea that it's hard to give the player a sense of closure, especially towards the end of a game, without having something build up to something that is bigger than what they've faced up to that point.
Right, you want a crescendo.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's... And a cheap and easy way to do that is just to make it as loud and as flashy as possible.
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and so I don't know if there's a way, an elegant way around that, though, for something that would succeed on a mass level, like God of War. I don't know if there's a way around that.
Right, because that's just a natural... I mean, that's just how people make games, right? That's almost necessary, because you want to start off with bringing your player in carefully. Mm-hmm. You don't want to overwhelm them with a lot of enemies. You don't want to overwhelm them with difficulty. Mm-hmm. So you start off with fairly easy to do tasks. Mm-hmm. And then as you grow, as you know, where there would be a narrative crescendo, there's also a mechanics crescendo. Mm-hmm. And in order to fit those two together, you must have something that's very big, because it needs to be threatening narratively, but it also needs to be threatening in terms of the actual mechanics of the game.
Well, what if you start with really complicated mechanics and then continue, like take a game that, you know, uses every single button on the PS3 controller, and as you go along, like when you get to the very end of the game, it is boiled down to the most bare bones version of the mechanics.
I don't think people would be satisfied.
but I mean, you've gotten down to the essence of the game. Like, remember when we were playing Bit Trip Beat and we started failing, and then eventually you get to the Pong screen? To me, that's some of the most exciting times, because you are down there at the most basic level of the game.
Okay, well, they're exciting. That is exciting for one reason that I would say, and that is because you know that you are about to lose. Because you've just experienced the hardest difficulty. Right before that was the crescendo. And this is the point where it's exciting, because you're wondering whether or not you can come back and experience the epic again. You know?
So it's juxtaposed instead of like being a reward or something.
Exactly. But I mean, even epic is a reward. Like, look at something that's like Peggle, which I think actually criticizes both casual games and epic games, because it's a really simple casual game where you pretty much don't do anything. It's almost all luck.
Yeah.
But when you complete that level.
Oh yeah, and they start playing Ode to Joy
plays. There's a huge rainbow, there's fireworks, the unicorn pops up, and it's so funny because it doesn't need to be epic.
Well, maybe
it's
epic anyway. Maybe that's just maybe they're being sarcastic when they're doing that.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, 100%.
Oh man, I didn't know Peggle had so much industry and social criticism behind it. All my bad mouthing of it has been for naught.
Yeah.
I think this is also a relevant conversation to have in the light of E3. Because every single game, it seems like, that we saw at E3, with a couple notable exceptions, was either a sequel to or a new IP that's trying to cash in on the trend of massively epic games.
Right.
So you have Assassin's Creed 2.
Splinter Cell Conviction.
Splinter Cell. You have the next Drake's Fortune.
God of War 3.
Massive action
which
game.
Which looks great. I understand that. The Last Guardian. Kind of epic, you know?
Well, see, that's an interesting case, because if we're going to talk about Team Ico, then I think they tap into what Chris was saying about the restraint. Because you're in a huge world, but you're a very normal person in that huge world. You don't really have magical powers. You don't really have a huge world-shattering weapons. I mean, you have to deal with the world on its terms rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think the third Team Ico game might actually move towards the epic, because it seems like you'll have at least a small amount of control over that huge colossus that you're journeying with. Yeah,
but you know that at the end of that game, it's gonna die.
No!
It's gonna die, no. And we're gonna cry like we cried at the end of Dragonheart. It's gonna happen.
Oh man, well, at the end of that game, if it opens its mouth and Sean Connery's voice comes out, I'll be the happiest person on earth.
I am the last one.
Yeah.
What were we saying?
Oh, getting back on track. What were we talking about? We're talking about E3.
Yeah. Another example from E3 that I think fits well into that medium between epic and non-epic. Is that a good word for that?
I don't know. Is subdued, maybe, or reserved?
Reserved. It would be Heavy Rain from Quantic Dream.
Uh-huh.
And I think that, that you've got that level of seriousness.
Yeah. Right?
You've got that sense that there's real danger as your player is avoiding murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you also know that you're just one individual in this one house. Mm-hmm. You know,
and also, you don't have any superpowers. You don't have anything that is going to make you a superhero or something.
Right. And in fact, one of the biggest problems with Quantic Dream's first game, Indigo Prophecy, or Fahrenheit, was that at the end of the game, it suddenly got epic out of nowhere. Right? Like, the internet was somehow embodied into this like technical being.
What?
Out of the blue. So strange.
That just seems like Metal Gear.
Right. And exactly. Yeah. And I mean, part of it was the restrained nature was ruined by this need to go epic.
Yeah.
And the need was just because their deadline was coming up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Was that it?
I think that's what I heard.
Oh.
So part of it, I think, is like you were saying, is it's easy.
Uh-huh. It's a quick thing to do to cap off an experience by just giving them something that that stands in such juxtaposition to what they had experienced before.
And I think actually maybe that's part of the problem with E3, is that some of the games that look epic might actually turn out to be fairly restrained.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they need to show that epic, eye-catching thing for an event that is very short-lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, E3 doesn't last all that long. They need to blow their load...
All over the audience. All over them.
They need to know what is coming out of them.
Oh, man, this is quickly degenerated.
what I mean to say is...
Well, here's the thing. How about an example like this? I think one of the most impressive games at E3, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, was Scribblenauts.
Yes.
And it's a really reserved game, but it gives you powers that you have never seen before in a video game, but it does so in a very tongue-in-cheek way. I mean, you're basically drawing things. I mean, the things that you are creating are like a children's drawing.
Right.
But you're doing things that you'd never be able to do in God of War.
And that's yeah, I agree. But that's almost... That's the barrier between something being totally rad and being almost gaudy with its visual appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And Scribblenauts is just... technologically rad, technologically epic.
Yeah.
That the fact that I can write in, you know, I saw a video where someone wrote in Kraken and a huge giant squid shows up. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I mean, how does that fit in with the whole trajectory of making games bigger and flashier? I mean, will it just get lost in the flash of, you know, Uncharted 2 or something like that?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is I'm actually not so sure that we have that problem. I think part of the reason we see so much of this epicness is because when we look at games outside of playing them, it has to be the big epicness that catches our eye.
Okay. So you mean if you can't actually experience it firsthand, like literally with the controller in your hand, then... it has to be appealing enough to watch.
Right. And I don't deny that there are epic games, you know, like Dead Space, Halo, you know, God of War, Gears of War, Mag, countless first-person shooters are epic and disgustingly so. And maybe there are too many of them. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But I think E3 is an unusual case because... even if it isn't epic, it has to be marketed that way. Even Scribblenauts has to be marketed with people thinking of crazy stuff to say.
Mm-hmm.
When the actual gameplay, you're probably not going to be writing in God and Kraken and Flamethrower all the time.
Maybe you won't.
but you'll probably write in legitimate things, you know, like wheel plus cart, you know, maybe a ladder.
Yeah.
And it's not going to necessarily be epic, but what's going to attract people's attention is that rarity. I mean, maybe that's part of it, is that you get industries making games to be epic, to catch people's attention, and then they're stuck having to follow through on it.
How do you think because the other thing that came out of E3 was that now all three platforms are doing some kind of motion control. And it seems like that instead of going for the bigger, flashier, gaudier version of gameplay, that the Wii, with its motion control, has actually scaled the other way. It's gone to the mundane. What do you use your Wiimote for? Use it for cooking. Use it for for balance this broom on the end of your finger. You use it for exercising. By and large, you don't use it to cast spells or split open mountains or something like that.
Yeah.
Even in Mario, all you use it to spin. You don't even really use it for anything that crazy in games where it could be used for something that is heroic. I mean, I guess in Zelda you use it for a sword, but and then the other thing is, even when it is used for something that is more badass, it tends to not work out that great. I mean, like Red Steel. I mean, and Mad World was cool and everything, but I mean, Mad World was cool because of the art style more so rather than the motion control.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like, how is the motion control going to interact with this movement towards the over-the-top blockbuster?
I don't really see it as all that compatible, really. Yeah. I mean, and I think it's kind of what I was just talking about earlier with the more complex control system and more complex mechanics leads to more epic games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the simpler games with simpler mechanics, because that's what it is. I mean, Project Natal doesn't even have a controller.
Yeah.
There's very few games that I can imagine that is going to be able to use that in an epic way.
Mm-hmm.
Just because all you're doing is moving your body around. It's fairly simple. There's only one input device.
Well, and plus, I mean, if you can't do a backflip, then, well, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could vary it. You know, you could play Wii Sports, but instead of soccer balls, they're fireballs.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you could say that's epic. But the simple nature of motion controls does not lend itself well to complex actions, and therefore epic actions.
Well, and also because the motion control has, in its current form, motion controls have been used to approximate real world actions. And so if you get to something that is increasingly more supernatural, for me, it starts to become an uncanny valley. I mean, like, sure, I'm throwing a fireball, but it actually feels more fake to me when I'm throwing it with a Wiimote than when I am pressing a button, because it's just a poor equivalent to actually throwing a fireball.
Yeah.
Being closer to it actually makes it less realistic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I could see that.
I just don't think that that something like God of War would even fit in very well with what PlayStation and Xbox have brewing with their motion control.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are they just going to split up their games now? Are they going to have, like, a Nintendo division and an epic division of games? I mean, like, it's just, I don't see how they can integrate these things without doing a lot more work on both the technical and design side of things.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I guess that's just a schism that will naturally form, you know? And I think you kind of already get that with really popular casual games.
Like what? Like,
well, I mean, like Imagine Babysitter and Imagine like Pony Races. Like, these aren't games that are aiming to be epic experiences.
Uh-huh.
They want to capture things that you can do in real life, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why something like Heavy Rain is kind of cool, because it's capturing things that you can do in real life if you were a cop, or if you were a detective, if you were maybe even, you know, a martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
Even something like Punch-Out, you know, is not incredibly realistic. There's not a lot of sweat coming off of your brow when you get hit in the face, because that's not the point of it. It's not to do this flare. It's to mimic your own actions in that arena, you know?
Mm. Yeah, there's a certain amount of, well, there's two things going on. I mean, stylized action is different than something that is trying to go for 100% photorealism.
Oh, yeah, fidelity. But there's also stylized epicness. Yeah. So it's not like they're incompatible.
True enough. It just seems like the games that impress me most with their scale do restrain themselves a little bit at certain points, or restrain the player at certain points. Like, if, you know, we were kind of criticizing God of War a little bit for being over the top, but one of my favorite moments of God of War was from part two, where in the beginning you're stripped of your powers, and you're in this huge city, and you're fighting Zeus, but you can't even lift your chains anymore because you've been stripped of your powers. And so by actually restraining the player, it made me more aware of the scale of the game, because it made me appreciate more when I was actually kicking ass, like how hard it must be to do it.
Yeah.
And how crazy the things actually were. You know, it wasn't, because you kind of get desensitized to it after a while.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it comes down to. It's not really an issue anymore of
Can we do it?
Yeah. Or even just epicness.
Mm.
It's more of a question of when is it appropriate. And I think it's easier to tell now when it's not.
Yeah.
You know, even Gears of War 2 is over the top completely intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a B movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are supposed to feel that we are too epic because the characters are too epic in a universe that is too epic.
In a world that's too epic.
Exactly. And so if Gears were put onto a different game, you know, that was stylistically different, but there were still chainsaw guns, there was still over-excessive blood, but, you know, maybe it was, I don't know, Kingdom Hearts, you know? Maybe Mickey Mouse was tearing into Squall or something. It would be weird. It would clash. And I think that's what you get with a lot of games that are just kind of poorly built. You have an overly epic narrative mm-hmm. and an overly epic mechanic mm-hmm. that just doesn't really fit well together because there's no it doesn't fit a theme.
So where does that leave us? I mean, like, how do, is there any, because I don't know, on a certain level I refuse to believe that we can't resolve the problem of having something be a complete huge blockbuster over the top and also have it make the player think or make the player slow down a little bit. And I think maybe motion control is the answer if you want to go in that direction.
I don't.
You don't? Like, don't you think, like, if it really makes you feel like a mortal if you have to perform the actions yourself?
Maybe. I mean, if you're getting tired and mm-hmm. stuff. Gears does it well with needing to push the button very mm-hmm. fast mm-hmm. to do, you know, because my thumb gets tired.
So maybe it's just an artistic thing then, like Prince of Persia or, you know, a game that comes to mind is Mirror's Edge, because you're always in these huge environments, but you're a very fragile person. You don't have superpowers. You can die if you fall for too far. You can only take a couple shots before you drop. And the scope of that game is large in many respects. But at the same time, you're one person in a larger story.
Yeah.
And you're subject to events that you don't have complete control over. And so you're not just this god that can jump from building to building. You have that power, but it's because, you know, you've trained and you've practiced for it. You're not necessarily a supernatural being, but you still exist in a world that is a little bit larger than life.
Yeah, yeah. I think that works. Yeah. And I guess to some extent you're right about the motion control, just because with simpler mechanics and with simpler environments, mm-hmm. you're not going to need these more large, epic scale activities, you know? Mm-hmm. If we're comfortable with a few weapons, with a few things that we feel is necessary to fit the theme and the narrative, mm-hmm. then we don't need everything else, you know?
That doesn't mean that I don't want to see Milo with a Viking helmet and a flaming arrow, but...
Well, make Milo dodge my arrow.
Dodge your axes, yeah. As you do. You run over there, Milo.
Milo, put this apple on your head.
Oh, man. Okay, so with the obligatory Milo joke thrown in there, yeah. I think it's about time to wrap it up, what you say?
Yep.
All right, if you want to write in and talk about the scale that we find in games and how to approach the epic aesthetic, you can email us at experiencepoints@gmail.com.
Alternatively, we update our posts Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings. Feel free to comment on our writings. We always appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Until next time, have fun.
Have fun.
Epic. I can't believe they're actually named Epic. That's the funniest thing. That's balls. Yeah.
It is ballsy.
It's ballsy. There's a place you go to.